The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Bye, good afternoon. We're talking about housing today with David Ashford, MHK, and Councillor Peter Washington from Douglas City Council. Whether it's Douglas City's housing, social housing in general, anything you want to talk about, the future of housing on the Isle of Man. And of course, it is a moot point with many people, i.e. getting on the housing ladder, be it social housing or purchasing housing or the DOI's housing. So, Fastema, Peter Washington, hello, good to see you.
Thank you for inviting me.
No, not at all. And David Ashford, MHK, with, of course, Cabinet Office, but also it's Housing and Communities Board.
Yes, I chair the Housing and Communities Board.
Okay, and that's what's that purpose? What does it do?
So the Housing Communities Board was formed after the general election in 2021 by the Chief Minister to help try and bring together the various strands of housing policy across government, because housing is split over several departments. So there's elements in Cabinet Office, elements in Department of Health and Social Care, and elements in DOI. So what the board does is it brings all those strands together to try and develop a centralised policy to make sure that everyone's pulling in the same direction.
Okay, and Peter Washington, you are chair of the
Housing and Properties Committee. Yes,
which means what does properties mean? What
Well, the council have their own properties that they run and that they rent out, so it's a big portfolio of different things. But in the main criteria is all the social housing that Douglas City Council have.
2,300, is it?
Just a little bit over than that, yes.
Okay.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. So, I mean, is it the first time you've done this, but chaired this particular committee?
Yeah, I've sat on the committee for the last 4 years. And then with the last election only a month ago, when everything changed, I was lucky enough to be able to get chairman of this committee.
Okay. With a view to doing what, Peter?
Well, I think for the first time in a long time, and I don't know if I'm not saying that I'm unique or anything, but I'm actually a council tenant. So to have a chairman of the housing committee and have a tenant in such a position, it's going to be, I think, very useful.
Okay, in what way?
Well, I think for the last 4 years, I think I've managed to make a difference in a lot of the things that we do have control and power over. I think the Williston refurbishment, a lot of the initial problems that we were having at the beginning, I've been able to give them first-hand knowledge about the effects that it's having.
Right.
And quite often, it's the humane side of things that sometimes just needs that pointing out. And when people make decisions, if they don't understand that there's a cost, a humane cost to it, and to have somebody who's embedded in that community to be able to bring that first hand to them, I think it's made a huge difference. Not just me, but the other members on that committee as well.
Williston's big. Is it the biggest estate?
It's the biggest estate that we have on the island, yeah. Over 750 units or houses or properties, yeah.
And how far is the refurbishment through now?
We're just over halfway. So we're a little behind time, which I think on a project so big, and I think because of the nature of how it started, there was a lot of naivety about what was needed in these properties. And I think as it's gone on and on, the list of actual refurbishment criteria has completely changed.
Right.
And I think now we've got it right. Those houses that are being refurbished now, they're having everything done to them inside and out. When it started 7 years ago, they were only doing the outside skins, which left the inside a 50s house. And there was no point having a nice new roof on and nice new walls, and yet your floorboards were going through, which was happening. But now, as soon as those properties become vacant, there's a surveyor survey are in there and everything that's needed is listed. So when those properties are handed back to the tenant, we anticipate that it's going to be a good 10 years before any more maintenance is going to be needed in there.
Okay, and how's the budget looking for it all?
We're still on budget. There is a, it's very tight, it's very... it's very concerning because it will be quite easy. One of the biggest things that we cannot do is we cannot run over budget and we cannot run over time. The length of time that it's taking to do a lot of this work now, we appreciate now that there's more work that's going to be involved. So it's gone from a 14-week project to do each property. Some of the houses now, it's taking a year because, you know, they're replastering and the floorboards and everything
But they're hefty buildings, aren't they?
They are hefty buildings, but I think the value that we've got with this project that has been how it's gone on, there was a perceived perception of how it would be. The actual reality is completely different. And I don't think in reality that if we had other properties in this state, we would do the same thing again. It will be completely different. So the learning curve that we've got, and that's not just for us, that's for everybody on the island. And we have got legacy issues of older properties.
Does this sound familiar, David Ashford?
It does. I mean, I was chair of the Housing Board at Douglas Council back when the Williston project actually first started. So it does sound very familiar. I mean, at the time, Douglas Council at that point were pushing to actually do what we did in Paul Rose, which was basically knock it down and rebuild. The Isle of Man government at the time actually turned around and said they didn't believe that was value for money. Ironically, with the way the project had to go and the additional works that have been found, if you total it up now, the budget's probably higher than what a knockdown and rebuild would have been if they'd started it at the beginning. But Douglas Council has been determined to see the project through. Douglas Council's been working very hard to try and accommodate tenants' needs. And certainly, although it's taken a long time to get to the point we're at, as Peter's said, it is now moving forward and it's actually providing modern homes.
And the important thing is, as you say, modern homes, and a social house should be a modern, well-appointed home.
It should. I mean, you know, you should not have a different standard in the public sector than you would in the private sector. If you were going to rent something privately and you were paying for it privately, you'd expect a certain standard. You should be able to expect that standard off the public sector.
Okay, if you want to get in touch with Peter Washington or David Ashford, call 66 13 68, text 166 177. You can WhatsApp on the same number or email studio@maxradio.com. Peter Washington, now, do we know what's going to happen to Lord Street Flats now? Have they been sold?
Well, I know, but I'm not too sure if I can let you know.
Well, we appreciate there may be confidentiality bits, but is the project moving forward, shall we say?
Yes, one of the things that always about Lord Street, we anticipated that we cannot have that building being left empty for any length of time. It had to be progressed, and the council have done everything in their power to facilitate that. But you've got to appreciate that sometimes we have to ask central government, and sometimes they're not as quick as what we are. And but I think a lot of those issues that we're talking about, what is happening, we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's now, and very hopefully, yes, it will all be. It will all be out, and everybody will know what's happening with it. What we've got to remember is that those properties, you know, 100 years old, the two new blocks of flats that replace them have increased our portfolio, and they've again raised the standards. Yeah. That came in on time, on budget, and that proves that the City Council, when it does come to housing, they take it very seriously. And when we do get delays, it's always not of our making, although we have to take the whipping from the public who believe that it is.
Okay. Is there a plan to build more social housing in Douglas?
Oh, there's a big plan. There's a 10-year plan. We've had a 10-year plan since September 2022 when I first joined. I remember reading that 10-year plan, and it's an absolutely fantastic piece of work, and it's all about increasing the number of properties and the standards of those properties. But unfortunately, again, it had to go to the government, and the government have been sat on it for the last few years. But this March, it's all been updated, and from conversations with government, it's now getting the approval and it's now moving forward. And I think later this year we'll have some big announcements about what actually is entailed in that plan. But it's a very forward-looking plan, and it's a very ambitious plan. And it cuts across not just housing, but community assets and what community needs. And I think we've got to get away from just thinking that social housing is just a building that we put people in. We've got to start building communities. And I think the whole essence of the 10-year plan is about building communities.
And presumably you've had sight of that, David.
I have indeed, both as a Douglas MHK, but also obviously as chair of the Housing Communities Board. Douglas has got a very ambitious plan. It's a very good plan, and it will radically change and increase the social housing landscape within Douglas. One of the key things is that the Treasury Minister and myself have both been engaging with Douglas Council for about 18 months, 2 years now, to try and get this moving forward, because we both recognise the importance of it and the value of it. One of the big issues, as people will know, has been the deficiency, the housing deficiency and the cost of that, because if you are going to invest in housing, that investment requires quite a large input of public money, and it's important that we know where that public money is coming from. The deficiency has caused issues in the past about the limitations on that, and that has slowed things down. But by working together and having the Treasury Minister involved in conversations with Douglas Council, I think we've found a way forward.
Okay, can you tell us anything about locations?
So that's down to the council, I would say, more than anything, in terms of it's their plan, it's not government's plan,
right.
But we are certainly keen to try and help facilitate that, and that goes the same for the other housing providers around the island as well. We've had the objective assessment of housing need that actually says we need to be building 100 affordable houses a year for the next 10 years to actually meet growing the existing demand. So that means 1,000 houses over the next 10 years. And this administration's recognised that and is determined to drive that forward.
OK. Just regarding, the oldest social housing, is it Hillside? Westmoreland Road, is it? So, I mean, without giving too much away, and I don't want to compromise anybody, but you've said that obviously at Paul Rose stuff was dropped and rebuilt. That may have happened at Willesden, but didn't. Is this something that the council is going to be looking at in the future?
Oh, it's definitely. That's part of the 10-year plan. The 10-year plan isn't just about one area in Douglas. It covers the whole of the city of Douglas. And with those numbers of those properties, we have certainly got some legacy issues, and some of the smaller estates. Every part of our estate or of social housing is going to be incorporated in this 10-year plan, and some of the assets are going to be moved around. So there's going to be an increase. The overall increase in properties is one of the driving forces about it. But there are some interesting issues about it, but you've got to appreciate that we're talking about these homes that people are living in now, and I don't want to do is to have a fear factor by saying that some people might be thinking that their house isn't going to be there. But we have to engage with all our tenants before we can go public on this, so that everybody knows at what stage where we're at and what it is. We don't like moving people unnecessarily. We learned that lesson at Willesden, moving people into transit houses, and there's a lot of engagement we've got to have with a lot of the tenants, and their security and their safe well-being has got to be paramount in anything that we do.
Okay, so just let's get this straight then. For the 10-year plan, is the money there? Is the money there for that? Is the budget there for that? What point in the process are you?
Well, I think this is where me and David have a slight variation in opinions, because this deficit, I've been at this since 2019, and the deficit is what's collected in rents versus what it costs to actually run. And I think the Minister for DOI, Dr. Michelle Haywood, MHK, she released a report early this year, the Alter report, of where they were going to think of building a housing association. But one of the issues that came to light in there, when you read that report, and it is public, is DOI have been taking £5 million a year from rents and spending it on other things in DOI. So I don't understand how we've got a deficit of around £1 million when DOI are taking £5 million a year out and spending it on other things. I think it's very controversial. I think there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and I think, you know, openness and transparency hasn't been what it should have been. And I'd like more open and transparency to find out where that money has been going.
Just to be clear, though, that is the amount of money that actually that is actually raised from DOI housing solely. The deficiency in relation to that, because the DOI housing actually covers itself in terms of the rents coming in. The deficiency relates to all the other housing authorities on the island, and the amount of deficiency each year has been steadily climbing from about 3 million to 4 million to 5 million, projected up to 7 million a year. But one of the things I have always said is that we need to actually reform the way the deficiency is calculated, because one of the issues has been that the deficiency sits with whichever department has overall control of local government and housing, and that is at the moment is DOI, but it sits as a budget line. So for instance, if they go over the allocated amount of deficiency, that department then has to find it within its own budgets, and you would have a ludicrous situation of DOI, say the deficiency went from 7 to 8 million, of having to take £1 million off highways or somewhere else to actually balance it out. In relation to the additional monies on top that DOI actually redistributes elsewhere, the DOI is looking to see where those funding goes. But from my understanding, most of it actually relates to paying for the housing service itself that actually sits within DOI.
Okay. So could you just map out for us then where DOI sits in relation to an operation of public housing?
So DOI holds the actual public housing function. So the actual public housing team, which is responsible for the overall regulation of public housing and also manages DOI's stock, actually sits within DOI. The decision at the moment has been not to go to a fully fledged housing association, but instead to actually set up a housing agency, which would create a separation within DOI between the regulatory side and the management side of DOI housing. And so the agency would look to administer DOI housing.
Okay, and where do the local authorities sit in this diagram?
So the local authorities themselves, their regulation and so on is set by DOI. So the local authorities report effectively into DOI in terms of their public sector housing.
Okay, let's get to the lines now, and I think it's Mrs. Kelly. Is that Mrs. Kelly?
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Have you got a first name, Mrs. Kelly?
Yeah, Veronica.
Oh, Veronica. Well, you're live with David Ashford and Peter Washington. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been in my house on Groves Road. Don't know whether I'm Pull Rose or Spring Valley. When Pull Rose was getting done, we were Spring Valley. When Spring Valley was getting done, we were Pull Rose. But the point is, I've been in over 50 years, and about 13 years ago, we were told we were getting moved out. Then we were staying in while work gets done. Then we had a meeting down at the golf club, and the whole estate was getting knocked down. Now, we've been left in limbo all this time, no decorating getting done. My husband now is down with vascular dementia, Alzheimer's and cancer. And I would like to know what, because they can't be bothered getting in touch with us, what is happening to the houses here?
Okay, Peter Washington.
Well, my heart goes out to you, and it's a very sad story to hear this, but unfortunately it's something that we do hear quite a bit. And this is where I think we've got to start putting people before properties. And this is a case... Yeah, like I said, I've heard this so many times before, and people are being left in this situation. I can't give a definite answer on that property here and now, but I think I'd like to speak to my colleague, Councillor Stephen Crellin, because I can answer probably any question that you have on Willesden, but when it comes to Paul Rose, Councillor Crellin is my go-to man.
Okay.
And he will have the history and he will have the story on that one, and he will probably have the answers to that as well.
Okay, David Ashford?
Yeah, I think this forms part of the Spring Valley refurbishment that the council was looking to do, the Spring Valley development. My understanding is that there was looking to be monies apportioned to that in the next sort of 12 to 18 months to try and move it forward. It is something that seems to have dragged on for years. It was being talked about shortly before I left Douglas Council, that there needed to be either a refurbishment or a knocking down and rebuild of Spring Valley.
So, Veronica, when was the last time anybody spoke to you from the council?
I got a letter a few months back. My head's done. I can't remember exactly when. It was a few months back that they would be getting in touch. But we know we never will get in touch. They won't get in touch. They never do.
Well, the council has heard this now, and we've got your telephone number. If I may I give your telephone number to the councillor, and I can, they'll certainly be in touch with you.
Yes, I've been in touch with them for a bungalow or something, because my husband's getting where he can't go up the stairs now. Okay. I couldn't put a walk-in shower in because a family house. So...
Okay, right.
What do I do? Take him outside and give him a hold down?
Well, I wouldn't. Well, not in this weather, Veronica. I wouldn't.
No.
But anyway, listen, we appreciate your call today, Veronica, and somebody will be in touch with you very shortly about that.
Yeah,
you have to
call,
deal.
Yeah.
You have to deal with people, and again, these are people's lives, aren't they, Peter?
This is one of the issues that we've got with the legacy issue that we're left with. Some of the work that's been done on these houses quite a few years ago. Should not have been done. And when we're trying to refit some of these properties, it's the human cost that's always worse than the actual physical cost. And there's a prime example of we're not meeting the needs of some of these tenants.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? 30, 40 years ago, everybody had baths. Now it's showers, isn't it? People take showers nowadays.
I think she again has highlighted, and one of the things that we're having to address, that there is a policy that DOI enforce with us that we've got to follow, is about we cannot put showers in council houses. They've got this policy, and it's a ridiculous thing that on the first floor you've got to have a bath. You can't have a shower. It's not about the needs of the tenant.
Right.
That policy is where it's come from, I don't know. But I often have to challenge this, because what we should be looking at is the needs of the tenant, not a policy which is about property and about bricks and mortar.
Are you familiar
with
that?
Well, just to be clear, there is an adaptions policy that actually allows for showers to be installed. So, for instance, there's several tenants I'm aware of where the council has installed showers instead of baths. They've taken the baths out and put accessible showers in. I can think of one up in Williston on Coniston Road that's not long been done, and another up on Viking Road. So it can happen. I think the general policy has generally been initially to have baths in. But one of the key points that Peter made is about, you know, the ageing stock. And that's something I've gone on about for quite a long time, because Douglas were actually quite strong pioneers when it came to public sector housing. So you had Williston built in the 40s and 50s. You had Paul Rose in the 30s and 40s. You had Westmoreland Road even earlier, the first proper sort of public sector housing on the island. And the problem is all of those properties are now becoming of age, so to speak. So they're all needing work. And one of the challenges Douglas has is with that ageing stock, it requires more in maintenance. So one of the things I have always supported is that there should be a differential in maintenance allowance dependent upon the age of the stock. Because at the moment, if you're a local authority that has brand new stock all built, say, in the last 20 years, and you're another local authority or housing provider that has an 80-year-old stock, you still receive the same percentage of rent to retain for maintenance. And I've always believed there should be a differential taking into account the realistic proposition that those with older properties are going to have to spend more.
Okay, let's go back to the lines. Patrick's with us now. Hi, Patrick. You're live with Peter Washington and David Ashford.
Yes, I'm complaining about a property I own in Kirk Michael. It's called The Cottage, and next door is Church House. It's a big building. It's been empty for years. I spent £4,000 after the last tenant died to renew it. And what's happening is the water is coming into my property, and it has done for over 12 months. I've asked people, no one wants to do anything about it. I'm sick to death of it.
Okay. David, this is more David Ashford.
So there is powers for the local authority under the Building Control Act to be able to take action against any dilapidated properties or properties that are causing a nuisance to other to other properties. Obviously, I don't know the exact details of that, but actually, if you send me an email, it's david.ashford@gov.im, then I'll happily look into that individual one for you. But it could also, if the property is actually empty, it could also be worth seeing if the MUA will actually cut the water supply off to that property if that's where it's coming from. But if you send me an email, then I'll happily take a look at it myself personally for you.
It's not
the water supply, it's physically coming in. So there is powers under the Building Control Act for a local authority to be able to take action against a property that is causing a nuisance to another. But again, if you email me, I will still look at it personally for you.
Okay, Patrick, thank you for that. The email address, David, once again is...
So it's david.ashford@gov.im.
Okay, Sean in Douglas is a WhatsApp in for this and just said, why are there so many houses empty in Williston and some of them are refurbished and been emptying for a long time? Lost revenue. Also, bungalows in Fenella Avenue are still empty. What's going on with this? It's a bit disappointing, he said. What's the situation, Peter Washington?
So part of the refurbishment scheme is that we've got to move people out of the house while their house is being done up. So we've got all these transit houses. So a lot of these transit houses, because of the length of time that it's been taken from one phase to the next phase, there has been an overspill that some of those houses have been empty for longer than we would have liked. But that's in the main down to trying to keep on time with that's why we cannot afford to go over time on this project. There are some other properties that are empty. What we're finding is that when a property is handed back to us, when they're being surveyed, at one time everybody remembers, anybody in social housing, that when the house became empty it was just given to the next one and they had to get on and make do with whatever it was and sort it out themselves. That's not the case now, and what we're finding is in some of these houses they haven't had anything done to them for a lot of years. Now, to bring them back up to any kind of standard before anybody can go in, they're going to need an awful lot of work. Now, the economics behind this is that we can't just do each house individually when it comes up. So what we're doing is we're actually grouping these together and possibly getting around 10 houses together, again getting one contractor to come in to do the whole 10. And that means they can work round all the different parts of the house. And if they're waiting for plaster to dry in one place, they can be on with the next property and the next property so that they can bring them back. But again, it's this legacy issue of an aging stock that we're having to bring up to modern standards, and it's taking time and it's taking money, but it is at least being addressed now. And when these properties do come back online and people are back in them, again the standard that they're bringing them up to is we shouldn't be having maintenance problems with them for quite a few years.
Okay, so we're halfway through, you reckon, through the project. When will Williston be spick and span and brand new?
When will it be spick and span and brand new? Well, each of the phases that we've got, what we're hoping for now is that now that we know exactly what it is and the cost of everything, every phase has got to be checked for timings and for cost. And I'm hoping that it's going to be less than 5 years. What we want to be at this stage of the game is we've learned all the lessons. We should be accelerating the time that it takes to done, not having more delays.
Okay. Well, with that, you're listening to Peter Washington. He's the new chairman of Douglas City Council's Housing and Properties Committee. And with him is chair of the Government's Housing and Communities Board, David Ashford, MHK. And if you want to get in touch, text, email, call and WhatsApp between now and one. It's 252.
We interrupt this broadcast to inform all our listeners about the huge range of bathrooms and showers on display at Pacesetter. Yes, you all know that Pacesetter is known as the island's largest tile store, but I'm here to tell you that their bathroom displays are truly inspirational. Visit Pacesetter on Harris Terrace, where you'll discover a fabulous collection of stylish bathrooms. There's something to suit everyone, with design available. Pacesetter bathrooms and showers to show off about.
On our island, you know the value of the real thing. Fresh air, unspoiled landscapes, a road that truly connects you to the ride. That's why at Manx Petroleum, our premium vehicle fuels are just as pure. No unnecessary metallic additives, no shortcuts, just quality ethanol-free petrol and FAME-free diesel. The way it should be. When it comes to what goes in your tank, go premium, go Manx Petroleum. Manx Petroleum, always here for you.
Enjoy uncompromised relaxation at great prices in Millichap's Stressless Studio clearance event. Come and see the clearance prices for yourself and find out which of Stressless's range of recliner chairs is right for you. The Stressless Studio clearance event, now on downstairs at Millichap's of Ramsey.
The extended Ramsey Garden Centre is deceptively large. You'll find a warm welcome and everything from bedding and perennials, fruit and vegetables, to lighting, garden ornaments, bird baths, bird tables and indoor and outdoor pots. Come and browse at Ramsey Garden Centre.
This Tuesday at 5:30 here on Manx Radio, join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, for a special look back at the Silver Lapwing Awards, which were held here on the Isle of Man.
We chat to the finalists who encourage and support the wildlife alongside commercial food production and some of the organisers.
It all took place courtesy of Rob and David Cool from the Ballagorn Farm, who were the winners of the prestigious Silver Lapwing Award last year.
That's all in Countryside, Tuesday here on Manx Radio at 5:30. And don't forget, you can download or subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
David Ashford, MHK, Peter Washington, Councillor Washington from Douglas City Council. Oh, and Juan's on now. Hi, Juan.
How you doing, Andy? Peter and David, how are you?
Good Hello, afternoon.
Juan. Good. Yeah, a couple of questions for Peter, one for David. Peter, I mean, years ago in council housing, used to have regular inspections. Inspector used to go around and inspect the properties, which obviously would show up maintenance issues a lot quicker without it being a big issue. It sounds like you don't have inspectors there now anymore, and I'm just wondering, is that something that really should be brought in? So, as you said, the housing stock is getting older and needs more repair. A lot more quickly.
Okay, Peter?
Yeah, I think you've got to realise a lot of the history about social housing here, I get off of the people, that my neighbours that live around me, and they tell me that years ago the painters would be around, they'd be painting the window frames, the roof soffits, and there was the maintenance was done on a proper cycle, and somewhere in the 70s and 80s that just all dropped off, and I think that's when we got to the stage where right about the 2000s, when people were coming into the houses and nothing had been done, they were just empty shells. But I think now the council have realised that they cannot, that cannot carry on. We cannot let substandard houses out to tenants, and that's why that short-sightedness all them years ago is costing us a lot of money now to actually catch up. But I can assure you now that there are people, every house is being inspected, and there is a cycle of works to be done, because we cannot get in that situation again, that when houses are being given back to us and you walk in, they're in an absolutely, some of them are nearly falling down.
Is this a direct labour force or contractors?
Well, at the moment we have contractors doing it round, and like I've explained once, when we get some really big jobs, our staff can't do it. We have had an issue over the last few years that we couldn't recruit staff, and that was all about single status and the pay awards and what have you. But now that the council workforce is getting paid to a level that's equal to lots of other people, we have started recruiting again. And if you go on the website, there are maintenance people that we are advertising for, painters and maintenance people. But yeah, there is a way things have been done in the past have led us to where we are now, but that's not where we are now, and we are definitely going forward with planned maintenance.
Okay, Julian.
Yeah, I think my point there was you used to have annual or biannual inspections, which obviously the inspector went in there to see if there was any mould or damp or whether people were ventilating the houses properly. And the other point as well, I'm trying to get through stuff quickly. I think you've got 50, 56 houses which are empty at the moment, and you've cited that you use them as transition houses. Devon Watson, when I asked him this question the other week, said that it was down to financial situation of getting the works done on these houses. And again, I asked a question there for your 10-year plan, where is that money coming from? And that was an interesting statement you made about DOI and the transparency. I'll bear that one in mind, looking down the rabbit holes in the future. David, I wanted to come on to you on more a bigger scope with housing. I was with someone the other day who was renting a property. Within 24 hours, they had 20 viewings listed for that property. Most of them are from people off the island. The Isle of Man is advertising very, very heavily in Africa at the moment in different parts for people to come here and work. This is either companies that's here or the Isle of Man Enterprise, which is doing this. The people, and I spoke to this person, I've spoken to quite a few of them, they say we come here because we're asked to come here to work. When we get here, we find that there is no properties. There's nothing here for us. They're taking, like, I wouldn't say substandard properties, but they're taking HMO properties because there is no accommodation for them. So my point here is this island is bringing these people in from far afield and telling them there's this, that and the other. But my bigger emphasis here is what pressure is this putting on local people? Because everyone is now fighting for these houses. The local people who have lived here and cannot get on the housing ladder, cannot get any decent rental accommodation, are in the queue with people coming over here to get properties. So with your vision of centralised planning, etc., and joined up government thinking, where does that lie within this plan?
So where that lies, Tuan, is you're quite right, and there's no point being around the bush with it. The private rental sector at the moment is under a huge amount of pressure. There's a lot of people chasing very few properties, and what that's also doing is driving up prices in the rental sector as well. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. The solution basically is that we increase the amount of public sector housing available in terms of social housing, but we also allow those who are in the private sector rental who want to buy the ability to buy. Both myself and the Treasury Minister and the Housing Communities Board as well have been meeting with several organisations that may well have ideas to be able to drive that forward and make it easier for people to get that first step on the ladder, because you know that is also a problem which you just highlighted there, of people actually stuck wanting to buy and own their own home but not able to get the deposit together or something like that. So we also are looking at the different types of housing schemes available, but like I say, it's no quick fix. What I know a lot of companies are doing now as well, some are houses in multiple occupation, but they are looking at actually sourcing their own housing as well rather than relying on the private rental sector. Because I've actually spoken to companies who've got a similar problem. They're trying to bring workforce in and they can't find appropriate accommodation for them. So some companies have even taken to actually purchasing properties themselves to be able to put their workers up.
But again, we're back to the problem there of the local people. And I see now, that, you know, if you go down on Peel Promenade, there's someone's written on the bollards, on boardings of places that's going up at the end of the promenade. More expensive homes for non-local people. So we're getting a Fulu attitude coming back in again if we're not careful, David.
Well,
people are getting, are getting a little bit upset that there's nothing there for them.
Well, there's several things we need to do, which is firstly encourage people back into the private rental market. What we have seen is a contraction of that, and I've spoken to various landlords about why that is actually happening.
Is that because of the Landlords Act?
There's several reasons. I have had feedback, I'll be perfectly honest, with some saying they're worried about where the regulation might sit and the increased pressure, because there is always a myth out there that we've got multimillionaire landlords owning hundreds of properties, and while we do have a couple, the vast majority of our landlords are actually small landlords owning two or three properties, and they're worried about the impact on them. But also with the way interest rates have gone and buy-to-let mortgages, that's made it more expensive for people to enter the buy-to-let market. And also a lot of people have found out that actually, again, with the way interest rates are, if they actually withdraw from the private sector rental market and put the money in the bank, they're actually getting a higher return in some cases than actually being in the rental sector. So there's a multitude of factors that have actually caused this. But the important thing is that we try to encourage people to get in there. But we also ensure that those that need social housing and those that want to buy, who are currently stuck in the rental sector, actually have the ability to either get into social housing by us expanding social housing, or get be able to buy their own home via schemes that actually suit them. And that in itself will then release the pressure in the private rental market. Like I say, I'd love the fact there was a single solution that would be able to fix this, but it is a multitude of things that will actually release the pressure.
Okay, and I've had a couple of messages about this on the same lines, and it is, as Juan said, we go back to the time when people resented people coming in from outside and took matters into their own hands sometimes. Now, if people who are resident on the Isle of Man and have been resident for a while simply can't get onto the ladder, whether it's private rental or whatever, and they see people coming in from outside who get onto the ladder, then that's a source of social unease, don't you think?
It can create social unease in the longer term. And I think one of the absolutely key things, Andy, is that, like I say, we ensure that all the different strands that we are currently working on as a government actually come together and deliver. Because certainly in terms of the first-time buyer schemes, you have to have residency criteria to be able to enter those. You can't just come to the island and suddenly try and pick up a first-time buyer's house or help and support. There is residency criteria around that. And what we need to do as well is be looking at what schemes are available, what the criteria are. And as I said in my immigration statement to Tim Ward only 2 months ago, ensuring that we put Manx residents and Manx people first.
OK, thanks, Juan.
Thank you, guys.
Can I just put another aspect on that? We're looking at a cliff edge in a few years' time, because we're going to have people that can't get on the housing ladder. They're stuck in rented accommodation. And then at some point, when they come to retire, their income is going to drop. They're not going to be able to afford to rent at the prices that they've got. Where are them people going to go? This is imperative that more social housing is built to expand the availability of housing, but also we've got to start looking at the future to see where we've got people. There's no point having people working here all their working lives, and then when they come to retire, they take their Manx pension and have to go to England to live because it's cheaper.
And that's one of the reasons, Andy, that actually that is recognised in the objective assessment of housing need. So if you look at the pipeline over the next 4 years alone, in 2025 there's going to be 48 public sector rental houses completed, 2026 50, 2027, 74, and 2028, currently 35 planned, but that number will obviously go up because it's so far into the future. That was exactly what was actually identified, and we have to deliver 100 affordable houses a year over the next 10 years just to meet current demand.
Okay, we're with David Ashford, MHK, and Peter Washington from Douglas City Council. And if you want to get a note in, you can text, email, WhatsApp, or you can call.
Back pain, neck pain, headaches, joint pain. At Align for Life Spine and Posture Clinic, we've been helping Manx residents for 15 years with our holistic, evidence-based care and therapies. Plus, we're now open Saturdays to make it even easier to see us. Visit our brand new website at alignforlife.com or find us on Facebook for opening hours and more information. Align for Life, 15 years serving the community of the Isle of Man.
Looking for a dementia care home? Summer Hillview is a brand new purpose-built care home providing fabulous accommodation and excellent EMI nursing care. With bespoke care plans and registered nurses on hand, delivering round-the-clock care alongside a fully trained care team. There's a daily activity schedule for a full and active life, and the care home is fully accessible to loved ones, friends and family. For information, call 777-077. Summer Hillview, putting you at the centre of your care.
Do you want to have your voice heard? The Isle of Man government wants to connect with you. Join the Chief Minister and the Council of Ministers at a roadshow event near you. Monday the 30th of June at Ramsey Grammar School. Tuesday 1st of July at Ballacamine High School, Douglas. Wednesday the 2nd at Castle Russian High School. And Thursday the 3rd at Queen Elizabeth II High School, Peel. All events are from 5:30 until 8. And doors open at 5:15. You'll have the chance to meet ministers one-on-one, share your thoughts on national matters, and take part in a Q&A session. We're listening to you. Register your free attendance at islandplan.im/roadshows.
On last week's agenda, Laurie Hooper called out government for requiring higher pay for migrant workers than Manx workers, but was he right? The Treasury Minister doesn't think so, and he puts his case to agenda. Mr Hooper also suggested he would pull his Tynwald motion on releasing more detail about schools' assessment if the Education Minister conceded an improved position. The motion wasn't moved, so agenda asks the Minister what did she do to pacify Mr Hooper. That's all on agenda this evening at 5:30 p.m. on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. Is a war of words developing in Ramsey between the two MHKs?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
With David Ashford, MHK, and Peter Washington from Douglas City Council. And Peter Washington, could you explain the allowed income for a couple to get on social housing? Is it 36,000?
It's 38,500.
Okay, yet two people on minimum wage of 12.25 per hour, both work in 37 hours, is 47,000.
It's... This is the elephant in the room, that when we're talking about social housing, that this is an issue that keeps being put to one side. As a councillor and as a tenant, if I want to appeal against a five-year fixed-term tenancy, there's no appeal process. So these figures that are being introduced, that have been introduced, you can't challenge them. You can't appeal against them. They're being forced on tenants. And this is certainly a bigger time bomb than the one that I've previously been talking about. So... we're in a position where the only people who are going to be able to put the name down for social housing are going to be people that are on benefits. That's the levels that it's got. And that issue then creates a problem, because people who traditionally would have been wanting to put the name down on social housing are being excluded. That means we've got lots of families who are having to work, both parents working two jobs, just to pay the rent and a private accommodation. When they think, well, I'd be better off in social housing, they earn too much money. So they're excluded straight away. So that's another legacy issue that we're going to get going down the line, that they're going to be trapped in that kind of rental property. The other issue that we've got with a five-year fixed-term tenancy is that the amount of money before you're not given another tenancy after 5 years time, they review your tenancy, and then they're saying, well, you earn too much money. If you earn more than £67,000 between a couple, which isn't a lot by today's standards, you don't get another tenancy, so effectively you're being evicted. So we're stopping, when we look at the actual waiting list for people to come into social housing, those figures are being artificially held down. If we were to scrap completely an entry level to get on your name down for social housing based purely on financial income, that will give us a true figure of how many people need social housing. And at the moment, because of this lag that they've got and the way that it's been allowed to drop each year, as inflation has gone up, those figures haven't gone up, we're actually restricting people coming into social housing, and at the same time we're evicting people that traditionally would be able to stay in.
David Ashford?
Yeah, so I don't agree with the complete scrapping, because that's the system we used to have, and it meant that people on quite high incomes could apply for social housing and were competing against people on low incomes for properties as they were coming up. I actually was on the council during that system being in place, and it really didn't work. But one thing I do agree with, and both certainly me and Peter agree on, is the income thresholds need to be looked at again. I moved a motion in Tynwald around that. I've been campaigning in Tynwald back when I was a backbencher on this, because particularly the point of exit, where people are being told they can't have a renewal, that takes no account of age. You can have someone who's coming up to retirement who is then told, actually, you're over the limits, you need to go. So I think the whole thing does need to be looked at, and we need to ensure that it actually takes into account people's individual circumstances. But just to be clear, the actual amounts are listed in the legislation, so they are actually in the secondary legislation. But again, I've campaigned long and hard that there should be an uplift every single year to make sure that it's actually keeping pace with the rise in incomes. But just to be clear as well about the minimum wage, because you raised that point, two people on a minimum wage, it is based on the calculation of what people need to live off, and the calculation of what people need to live off for a couple isn't just taking wages times two. That's not how the statistics actually work.
Okay, do you agree with Councillor Washington that the clock's ticking, though, regarding this?
Oh, most definitely, and I've been moving motion after motion. Peter knows in Timbord, I think I moved three motions in total to get this actually looked at and to bring changes. One off the back of one of my motions is the reason now that both pensions and actually additional income and savings is actually calculated differently in the calculations than they were when this scheme first started.
Okay, well, we're about out of time now, so I'll ask you now, Councillor Washington, will he come back again and talk more about this?
I'll be only too pleased, having been here once and now I've got an idea what it's about. And
Didn't even talk about the Municipal Association. So.
Well, I'll have to come back and talk about that then, definitely.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today. There was lots more to talk about. Presume also we were going to talk about sheltered housing and where that goes. I know Douglas Council has Hazel Court and I think Waverley Court. And I think there's also Ballinard Court as well. So lots more to talk about where that's concerned. We've been talking about housing. If you want to follow up on this, by the way, all you need to do is to get in touch. The email address is maninline@manxradio.com. The answer phone will be on 682 631. Back tomorrow with an open line. And on Wednesday, Teresa Cope will be on, Chief Exec of Manx Care. So if you have any question you'd like to put to Teresa Cope, you can either send one to the Man in Line address or put a message on the answer phone or take your chance on Wednesday. So that's it. Thank you, David Ashford.
Thank you, Andy.
Good to talk to you as always. And Peter Washington, till the next time. Thanks for being with us. And thanks to Chris on the phone today. And thank you for being part of it. WINT.